Welcome to the Sweet Run Podcast, conversations with local passionate runners, because to run a city is to know a city. We're your hosts, Gerald Mitchell and Natalie Mitchell.
One of the highlights of my week is when I get to sit down and record the introduction for the latest guest on the podcast. And this week, you guys are in for a real treat. We welcome back to the Sweet Run Podcast, Olympian Kara Goucher. So Kara was first on the Sweet Run Podcast back in February of 2021, episode 16. Oh my gosh, that feels like so long ago. And fun fact, that episode was the most downloaded episode that we have ever had on the show. So we are just really excited to have Kara back. And we talk about her latest and brand new book, The Longest Race. She is now a New York Times best-selling author of that book, and she is also a sports broadcaster for NBC. So a lot has changed in 2 years in the very best way possible. We talk about all of those things with a big emphasis on talking about her book. And then in the second half of the conversation, we talk about Kara's original hometown of Duluth, Minnesota. So Kara was raised in Duluth, and she gets to spend 2 months out of the year in the summertime living there with her family. So she knows that town so well. And just in time for your prep for Grandma's Marathon, Kara lays it all out for us, including her favorite places to go running, great places that you guys need to hear about dining out options, beautiful places of interest that you must see and do when you come to Duluth, and a whole lot more. I either want to run Grandma's Marathon, which I'm not doing, or go on vacation to Duluth. That's how good it sounds. We can't wait to share this conversation with you guys. So here we go. Hormones, hormones, hormones. So much of a woman's well-being is impacted by fluctuating hormone levels. And Inside Tracker has added 3 new critical hormone markers to their ultimate plan: estradiol, progesterone, and TSH. During the month of May, women can analyze these new markers as part of the ultimate plan at no additional cost. Inside Tracker is the title sponsor of the Sweet Run Podcast. Go check out our landing page, insidetracker.com/sweetrun, and at checkout, use the code SWEETRUN to save 25% off. Ladies, go take care of your hormone health, and for everyone else, don't wait to find out what's going on inside your body. Go take care of it right now, today. And now, please enjoy our really fun and special conversation with Olympian Kara Goucher.
I recovered from Boston, Natalie?
You know, I think so. I have been running, and then today I was like, well, maybe I should take a couple days off and just do some cross training. I don't know. It's like, I feel like you run a marathon, and no matter how it goes, and then you kind of get like into this mode where you've been training and running all this mileage, and like you don't want to let it go. Like you just want to keep doing it. It's hard to take a break.
It is hard to take a break. And it's, I do think there's like a benefit to like running lightly, you know, and not just taking total time off. But sometimes we get into trouble of like, oh, wait, that buildup was a lot. My body does need downtime. But it is hard when you put in all that work. You're like, well, I don't want that to be it.
No, I'm like, you know? I got stuff to do.
I'm on a roll here.
Yeah, I'm on a roll. I don't want to waste it.
It's been so, I've just been devouring your book, and like, and I'm listening to it, or I've listened to it, and hearing your voice, I feel like you're right there with me. And like, just things like thinking about, like, you were running 135 miles a week. And I think about that, and I'm like, it's amazing to me. I mean, it's just like, you know, how the body sustains so much, and like mentally and physically going through, I mean, not going through it because you love it, but it is still, it's your job, you know, and it's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I loved training. I could still be a full-time trained athlete if my body would let me. I loved training for something. I loved having something on the calendar. I loved running all those miles. But of course, like, I was privileged to a place where like I would run, then take a nap, then get like massage, then eat well, you know, but I did love that. And I loved like just seeing how far I could take my body.
Yeah. Your story has inspired so many. How does it feel to be a New York Times best-selling author.
Well, it's not something I ever thought I would say. And like, big shout out to Mary Pallon, my co-author, because she helped me make it a reality. I thought there was a story there and I thought that people could relate to it. But I'm not a writer and there's no way I could have gotten it all down myself, or at least I'd still be working on it for another 10 years, you know? So I really appreciated working with her, and I'm just honored that people are reading it and talking about it, and it's leading to what I feel like are really important conversations for our sport.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you right off the top, as a guy who loved his mother, who loved his only little sister, who loves a pretty awesome wife and is a father to two daughters, that was a lot to take in. And one thing I've noticed in your interviews is that you have, when people talk to you about, you know, the whole book and whole in some challenging parts, the level of grace and empathy you have for someone consuming it for the first time, I think is amazing. You know, I've listened to a few where you're like, well, no, it's so, that's okay. And they're like, no, it's not okay. And you're like, you know, but you've had this time to process and they haven't. And it was a lot. And it was, I'm still like, just, I couldn't stop. I just couldn't stop taking it in. I did the audiobook and I just couldn't stop taking it in. And I'm just super excited to have the conversation and to see you again.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate you reading it and listening. I think that it's important for men to read it. I've had a lot of fathers tell me it was really hard to listen to or to read, but that's what we need, right? We need to all be honest and we all need to know what's happening. So I'm super honored that you both read it, and I'm super honored to be back to talk to you guys.
Yeah, it's been a while, so we need to catch up. And
I know. Wait, before we do our formal introduction, though, I have to jump in because the moment's going to pass. Like, Gerald was being so kind and, like, gracious. Like, when he talked to me, he was like, man, if I saw Alberta right now, I'd, like, want to just, like, punch him in the face.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I do love that reaction, so thank you.
Yeah.
I was like, let's keep it real here. Like, you're all being all nice. Yeah,
I like it.
Well, it's a podcast. I mean, if we were, you know, we're sitting over beer, my word choice might be a little different. But.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
Oh, man. Kara Goucher, welcome to the Sweet Run podcast.
Again.
We are honestly so honored. This is the second time you've been on the show. Welcome. This is going to be great.
Thank you so much for having me back. I'm excited to catch up with you both.
Yes. I mean, I feel like a whole lifetime has passed in the 2 years since you were last on the show, and so much has happened. I want to talk about your broadcasting career. You are now a sports broadcaster. It sounds like, you know, so prestigious, and you deserve every moment of it. Do you love it?
I do. I never saw myself doing that. And the opportunity, like, was just so lucky. Like, they reached out to me, said they were looking for some fresh blood. Would I be willing to do an audition? And I thought, like, I don't know. I'm not comfortable on TV. That's not what I do. And really, my husband, Adam, was like, just do the interview. Like, the worst case, it's a great story, you know? And so I did the interview right here in this office. And basically, it was like we rewatched World Champs from Doha in 2019, and all the sound was cut out, and then we just called the race, Lee Diffie and I did. And when it was done, I was like, that was fun. I hope I get the job. You know, it went from like just being something fun to try to being like, wow, I really enjoyed that. And then when I was offered the job, it was offered in a sense of like, we're very interested, but you need to go through some training. And so then I went through like 6 weeks of training, and then just started, and I've really enjoyed it. I miss being really, really fit, and I miss competing, and I know I'll never have that feeling again, and that's hard, and that's like something I've dealt with, but broadcasting does help me feel a little bit of those feels again, so it's been really, really fun.
Now, what was the difference between what you thought broadcasting might be, calling races, or what you may do in your own head when you're watching something, versus the reality of what you're actually doing?
It's so much more complicated than I ever knew. Like, there's a million people in your head all at once. You're being told what's coming up. You're being told slow down. You're being told we got to go to commercial. Kara, keep it shorter. Let Lee in. Lee, let Karen. There's like a million people talking in your ear. It's so fast paced. It's just not what I thought. I thought, like, you know, like I've seen some people do broadcasting where they're just sitting at a track meet having fun and talking. And I guess I kind of thought it was that, but just like a little bit more glamorous. But it's tough. And it was hard. I mean, my first job, I talked on a hot mic. My producer was in my ear. I was talking about Gemma Reiki and she's and Laura Muir. And then she said, and Stafford trains with them, right? And on a hot mic, I went, no, she left. She trains for shoot with Schumacher now or something like that. Like, and then everyone's like, Kara, you're on a hot mic. And then I said, what? Again, into a hot mic. Because I hadn't figured out like the mute and the cough button and the this and the, and all, you know, the direct line back to your producer. So there's just a lot more going on than I thought. And also I thought you'd be in these really comfortable situations with lots of space. And instead we are just crammed in these tiny little booths and like, there's no place for my notes or anything. So it's just, it's not what I thought it was going to be, but it's so much more fun than I thought it would be.
Awesome. I can imagine I would be sweating. Oh, yeah. I would be like, oh, pouring sweat. I would be like red. I would be like, oh my gosh, like, am I doing? I mean, I know you go through training and of course you practice, but that's, I would feel very nervous. And you sound just so calm and relaxed to us, just so you know. You sound like,
well, good.
Amazing.
So when I haven't called races in a while, the first race is really bumpy. And so like I haven't called a race since indoor nationals and I don't call a race again until outdoor nationals. So that first race is a little bumpy. But the one thing I am confident in is that I know the sport. I love the sport. I still devour the sport. And so that's the part where I do feel confident. The part where I'm sweating, Natalie, like crazy, is the top of the show when I have to be on camera. And I've asked NBC if that could be written out of my contract so that I don't have to be on TV. But everyone's like, no, you have to be on there. It ties the show together. But that's the part that I enjoy the least because I can't memorize a line. Like I was never going to be an actress. And we'll rehearse real quick and then we'll go live and I'll be thinking, wait, what was I going to say? Wait, who's tossing it to me? Is it Sonia? Is it like, and I just, it's so stressful. The Olympic trials, the first day that we went live on air, Lee asked me a question and I went, and I just totally froze God. And he had to take over. So I've gotten a little bit better at it, but that part, I don't think it'll ever come naturally for me. I just like to be the voice
right.
in the background. Yeah.
So yeah. What is your summer, as we're getting close to summer, what's your summer looking like for calling races?
So I have in my contract the U.S. National Championships, the World Championships, the Fifth Avenue Mile, and then the Prefontaine Classic, which actually is the last track meet of the year this year. It's the Diamond League Final. So that's what I have. And then I might call some some Diamond League races, but only if we can get – I'll be in Minnesota at our cabin, and the Wi-Fi is not the best. So we're working through that right now to see if I can get better Wi-Fi there. But those are the four things I'll definitely be at and be calling.
And that's nice that you have the ability to call races from home or do you work from home?
Yeah, so I only call Diamond League from home, which is funny because that's my least favorite because I can't see what's happening. Like whatever you're seeing is what I'm seeing. So like at US Championships or World Championships, I can stand up, I can feel the weather, I can look around, I can see the athletes come out before we call their race. But Diamond League, you don't see anything. You only see what everyone else is seeing. And I find that really difficult. And it's kind of funny because Des Linden calls a lot of Diamond Leagues. And she says it's so much easier. So I'm kind of like, can't we just like handshake like you do Diamond League and I'll do the other ones. But yeah, so I've called Diamond Leagues just right here in my office at home.
Nice. Now, and on the other end of the spectrum, can you roll up or have you ever rolled up on the local half and just like, hey, I'm going to announce some names as they're coming across the finish line and have some fun and no pressure, right?
I wish. You know, that's what happened watching Boston this year. I did not call that. ESPN called it, and I thought Kerry Tolson did an awesome job. But I was at home, and I had no one to talk to about my observations, so I just started tweeting them. I was like, I need to talk, and no one's listening, so I'm just going to tweet this into the universe. But it is funny. I watch things differently now. I really look for, like, knee lift and arm carriage and like what you know, it's I watch even when I'm not calling, I feel like I watch races in it from a different aspect now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Nice. You are awesome. You've got a lot of irons in the fire because you are now have your second podcast. I had to think about that because the Clean Sport Collective, which I love those stories and the things that you guys are bringing to light with that. And then now the new podcast with Dez. That's so exciting.
Thanks. So I think we joked on Twitter that we were going to do a podcast. And then one day we just like reached out and we were like, wait, should we do this? So she actually was in Boulder in the fall and we met at a coffee shop and we made the plan that we would record three episodes and just see what happened. So we recorded three episodes in December. I think we released them in January and we were like, we'll just see what happens. And if people like it, we'll do it more. And if they won't, hey, you know, it was fun to try. So, I just tell that story because it literally is so low key. Like we're recording again today and it's so low key. Like we have a basic idea of what we're going to talk about and we just kind of do it. But it's been really fun. It's been fun to get to know her better. I mean, I raced her for years, right? But like I didn't get to know her. So that's been really fun too, is that we have different personalities and we come from different backgrounds, but our cores are very similar and it's been really fun to get to know her better too.
Yeah. You know, I've been really enjoying listening to those episodes and I didn't realize that you guys really didn't know each other. But what I do love is there's one particular example in your book where you talk about being at the Olympic trials in LA and you came in fourth, which was listening to that for me was heartbreaking. Like I wanted to cry because you're like, I'd rather be 50th than be fourth.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and just that moment of like, turning the corner, seeing Shalane finish, the whole scenario was just very emotional to listen to. And then you were saying how Dez gave you a big hug, you know, afterwards. And I thought that's so great in the sport because you don't really know how competitors interact with each other and how they're going to be. And I thought, wow, that's really gracious and kind in that moment for her to do that.
Oh, yeah. When I finished, she was the first one that came over and she was just awesome in that moment telling me like, look how far you've come. Look what you just did. You're amazing. You know, she just was there for me in that moment. And she had done that for me before too. I think it was in 2011, we were running the Boston Marathon and I just started to suffer. And I've had people go by me and like, we're an open road, right? Like the elite women, like we have the whole road to ourselves. And I've had that happen where people go by and elbow me as just like, but she went by and was like, keep your eyes up. You know, people are going to come back to you. And so I think there was always just this mutual respect for each other. But we really, the first time we ever hung out together was after the Olympic marathon trials in 2020. And it was kind of funny. We both kind of stumbled into the hotel. Like I was coming from a Wazelle thing. She was coming from wherever she was coming from. It was around midnight. And we looked at each other and just talked for a couple seconds. And then she was like, do you want to go get a beer? And I was like, sure. So that was like the first time that we had hung out outside of a, you know, at a press conference or something like that.
Yeah. And then you did have, which I love this story. Was it your very first first marathon and you're chasing, you know, kind of on Paula and she had to scold you to tell you like, hey, give me a little space. So even then it didn't sound like malicious. It was like, yo, just chill. We're going to do what we got to do, but just chill. Give me a little space.
Totally. Yeah. And Paula has been so supportive of me. So all the kudos to her, but you know, I was coming straight from the track where you're getting elbowed and people are clipping you and it's no big deal. So I was just, exactly what you said. I was following her so closely that I kept clipping her heel. And finally she let me know like, dude, we have the whole road here. You do not have to be this close to me. And I was like, oops, sorry.
I know. Yeah. I do think about that in track. I know that's got to be an issue. You're so close, but like, come on. You don't need to elbow someone in the middle of a marathon, you know?
No, not at all. And like I was literally coming from 8 weeks earlier, I had run in the Olympic Games on the track, right? So I had come from that very aggressive place on the track. But it is definitely not necessary in the marathon. And I think, marathoning's tough. So, and when you have a bad day, it's tough. And there are days where you have a bad day. It's just inevitable. But those are the moments I remember. In New York in 2014, I was having a really bad day and I had been elbowed by someone And then Dina Castor went by and I thought she was just going to go by and not say anything. But instead, she kind of hovered for a second and told me, you can get through this. Keep working. You can get through this. And so those are the things that, like, I will always like Dina. I will always like Des. You know, like, those things stand out to me as they knew in that they could have been rude to me in that moment and, like, made me feel even worse. And I would have been like, oh, it's just racing. But instead, they decided to be kind.
Yeah.
And those are definitely some of the sections that I was thinking about. Our son Josh is, you know, running cross country and wants to get on the track and some of the longer distance. I was like, dude, you got to hear this part. It's a contact sport, baby. You know, it's you got to get into that, you know, because it was so, like you said, it was like NASCAR, Formula One, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, that's not how I experienced high school running. And even in college, it wasn't that bad. But when I became a pro, I realized, like, oh, yeah, I mean, no one should be impeding you. But there's people that will tap you with every stride just to kind of annoy you. And that's allowed. And so you have to learn how to just let all that go. If someone clips your heel, you just got to let it go. You can't get mad about it. If someone gives you a little elbow, let it go. And so those are the things that I think you learn as you get through this sport. But I wasn't elbowed in high school that I remember anyway.
And I hope that that does not happen to him.
Yeah, I hope not.
It's like, we don't want anything to taint the image of the sport at this age. They're too young.
Right. Too young, for sure.
One of the things that I really want to talk about and that I really appreciate is, okay, in the world of sport, like outside of running, we talk about the NBA, we talk about tennis, we talk about baseball. We can be having a beer, we can be talking, and we always talk about people's contracts. And it's just like no big deal. Like, the numbers are thrown around, mm-hmm. what players are getting paid and all of that. And I've always said this to Gerald, like, in the sport of running, it's always been so secretive. Like, we never know what's happening in the world of running, like what's normal, what's not, what's happening, what's not. And like, your book has been one of the first books that I've read that actually opens up the Pandora's box and tells us what is happening and what people are getting paid, what does contracts really look like? And I really appreciate that.
Thanks. I mean, I think of why most of us don't is because there are NDA or non-disclosures in like all of our contracts. And I broke that, but I felt like it was important because I feel like we've gotten to this place where people, and granted, my contracts were from a decade ago, so I'm sure that they have changed. But if you don't know at all what your value is, then you have no idea what to ask for. Like, if you don't know what someone else is getting, you have no idea like what would be fair. And so I felt like it was really important, especially at this time, like to risk breaking the NDA. So far, I haven't heard anything. But to share that stuff, because I think it's going to help the next generation. It gives them more power to say, actually, no, I deserve more than that. Or this is what you should be thinking about asking for. I think that in running, most of our contracts have NDAs. And then also we feel so grateful to have like our little piece of the pie that we don't want to ruffle any feathers, but that actually holds us back because then we aren't necessarily getting paid what we truly, truly deserve. And so I was like, I'm putting everything in there, all the reductions, all the clauses, how it all works so that the next American distance runner can look at that and at least has a template of what they should expect.
And I think that's giving back to the sport. Why do you think that running has, you know, so much of the NDA in your contract and like other sports are just kind of like an open book?
I know. Well, that's the funny part because we have NDAs, but some people are only making like 20 grand a year. And it's like, why could they risk being sued by saying that, you know? Again, I think it just holds the athlete back. I don't know why. I don't know what the original reason was. But yeah, you can look up all these other sports and see what mm-hmm. people are getting paid. And there's no like weird or shame. There's nothing weird that's attached to that. It's just like, oh, they're professional. This is what they're getting paid. And for some reason in track and field, it isn't like that. But I do hear athletes having these conversations a little bit. And I think that's important that they can talk to each other. Because again, if you never know, then when they say, oh, well, this is all we can pay you, when really maybe you're worth five times mm-hmm. that, right? And you just don't even know to ask for that or that it's possible to make that kind of money or whatever it is. And I think it just, I wish that it wasn't like that. I wish it would change where people could talk about it openly and that athletes could get what they deserve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
And I feel like in other sports, it almost is part of the lore of the sport and the mystique of the sport. It, you know, it makes it popular because they're like, oh my gosh, did you see what so-and-so? And oh, they renegotiated this kind. And oh my God, you know, like, I mean, it like for me, it changed my whole trajectory of even thinking about sport. I think it was in the 90s, Michael Jordan got paid like a $40 million contract for like one season. It was like whatever it was, but it was like $40 million a year. And that was the first time where I went, forget playing. I want to be the guy who could write that type of check. That's insane. But it was in the newspaper. Totally. Yeah. Right? It was just out in the open in the newspaper. And I was like, but running, it's like, I don't know, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I hear conversations about like Fred Curley switched his sponsorship this year. He's the reigning 100-meter world champion. And Noah Lyles, I've heard about his contract. And I feel like if those numbers were out there, it would be really good for the sport. It would almost authenticate it. Like these people are making good money. And because they're valuable, because they bring eyes to the television. And so those are just rumors I've heard, so I wouldn't feel comfortable saying them. But there are people – like I agree with you, Joe. I think like that would help bring attention. Like you see that, oh, this matters. Like they're getting paid well. People care about this. And so it kind of goes both ways. It not only like validates the sport when we hear about some of these athletes making a lot of money, but it also helps the athletes who are on these small contracts to say, hey, I'm racing against that person, so I deserve more money. I just think it would make the sport better. I think it would just be better for everyone involved and bring more eyeballs to it.
I agree with you.
Speaking of eyeballs, you mentioned eyeballs to the television. In the era of social media, do you feel like we're getting to a point where what you do off the track or off the road is starting to be valued a bit more? Because I was listening to this woman tell this story, and she did a whole lot while she wasn't on the track, and it didn't seem like she was getting valued properly at that time. But do you think that's changed?
I think it's changing. I think that we're seeing a lot of companies embrace athletes as whole people with whole stories. I don't think anyone thought of Allyson Felix as less of an athlete when she had Cami. I think people were even more intrigued if that was possible. I mean, she's the most decorated track and field athlete of all time. And I actually feel like people were even more interested after she had her daughter. And so I do think we're seeing this shift where, you know, I don't think it's necessarily about how many social media followers you have, but about like opening up your life and sharing that you are more than just a performer. And everybody that goes out there is more than that. And that's one thing. I was sad that Simone Biles, you know, faltered in Tokyo. I was sad that Michaela Schifrin faltered in the last Olympics. But I think it also opened up the eye. People still love them because they all of a sudden they could relate. They were like, oh my gosh, they're the best in the world at what they do. And even they have bad bumps and even they, you know, feel pressure. And I think all of that just makes the athletes more relatable and therefore makes our sport better because people are like, I can see myself in them. When all we see is results, you can't necessarily see yourself in them. And so I think that social media, for all of its faults, that's one thing it's done right, as it's helped athletes tell their stories more fully. And I do think that brands have been starting to shift to tell those stories as well.
Yeah, I think that is a valuable piece of it. One of the things that really, another part of your book that moved me as a mom was you having Colt. I was listening to it. I'm like, I had to go back. I had to rewind it. I'm like, 11 days later, you had to report to work on the track for a workout. And I was just like, there are no words. Like, I just felt so much emotion in that moment listening to you and like imagining you go through that. How does that make you feel retelling that part of the story?
You know, at the time, I couldn't even think about that this is not right, because I just was trying to survive. I was trying to get paid again. I was trying to get back into shape. I was trying to prove to everyone that I'm still the same person. Looking back, I do feel really sad. I feel like that was a really reckless decision to go back to training that soon. It definitely impacted my body for the rest of my life. It definitely impacted my mental health because I wasn't, you know, you've had three children. It takes a while before you feel like yourself. And I couldn't even allow myself to go there. It was just like, no, I have to get back to work. I think about Faith Kipyegon, who won the Olympic gold, won the world championships last year in Eugene in the 1500. And she has a daughter, Aylin, and she took a full year off after she had her daughter. And she took that time with her and she slowly built her body back. And I think one of the things that I always regretted is that my return from pregnancy was seen as some heroic thing that I did, when in reality it was dangerous and I wouldn't do it again. And so I love seeing other women like Faith who have taken a totally different path, but it hasn't hurt her at all, right? She has this beautiful daughter, but she's the world champion. She's the Olympic champion. It's just a different way of looking at it. And I have to give myself grace because the situation I was in was, I was back or we were going to, I had to get back. But at the time it was sort of like told in this like super strong woman story. And I do regret that. And that's why it was important that all of that was in the book to say, hey, I did this, but it wasn't worth it. I missed all this time with my son. I ended up having injuries for the rest of my career. And if I had just been able to heal before I returned to practice, like it could have been such a different story. And I don't want that to happen to anyone else.
But I want to say, Kara, that like when I was listening to it and like hearing you talk about it now, like as a mom, I don't think of you as being reckless. I think of you as being brave and doing what so many women have to do after they have a child, having to go back to work, whether it's running or a corporate career or whatever it is. It's like, I got to do what I got to do for my family. And so that's what you did. I think it's on the employer to protect its employees so that they don't have to be forced in that situation. So it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the position that women are being put in. And hopefully that's changing now.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I really do. I do carry some guilt just because that's not who I want to be. I mean, I left my son in the hospital to go to a workout, and like, that's not who I want to be or who I am. And so I think I'll always carry a little bit of just guilt that I didn't stand up and say no and be the person I want to be. But I hope that in telling that story, other women know they can say, no, that's not right. And but also, just as you said, this is unfortunately, a lot of women face this. I'm way beyond sport. We just don't have enough help in this country. And women, you know, they don't have enough maternity leave or protection. And unfortunately, this is something that a lot of women experience across all walks of life.
Yeah. And you were so lucky to have Adam by your side. Like, he was such a solid rock for you. And like, even though it, you know, there's, as a mom, it feels sad, you know, to not be there in that moment. But the positive thing is that, you know, Adam was with Colt, and like you yeah. could leave knowing like my husband is with our baby, and this is kind of a bummer, but he's not just with anybody. So that's a positive.
Yeah.
thing.
No, you're right. And I was really lucky to have Adam for a lot of reasons, but that he cared so much and that he wasn't gonna like I think it was like a couple months before the Boston Marathon, he's like, you're not getting up anymore. I will get up with Colt and I will give him a bottle and he will be fine and everyone will be fine and your body will actually be able to heal and move forward in training. And so I don't know what I would have done without him. I mean, we wouldn't be talking. I probably wouldn't have raced again, or I don't know what would have happened. But I was very fortunate that he was so involved, right? He wasn't like, it just falls on you. You had the baby. He was 100% my partner and we raised Colt together and he helped me so much.
So much. You know, I admire him so much because not only did he help, I mean, obviously, you know, in the fatherhood part of it, you know, that's what dads are supposed to do. And some of them don't step up to the plate, but the good ones do. And he's one of the good mm-hmm. ones. But he was also, I love the part where he stepped in to be your agent. You know, at one point it was like, you know, we don't need to like give the 15% to an agent. I can be your agent. And he was a great agent for you. And again, that just shows the partnership and strong bond that you guys have.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of trust and respect for each other. And so I don't want to say that it's always perfect, but I do feel you guys, both your faces are hilarious. You're like, yeah, we know, we've been married all the time. It's inevitable, right? But at the end of the day, we're like completely committed to each other and we respect each other so much. And I think that's how we were able to get through so many hard times, and we'll continue in the future because I trust him and I respect him more than anyone else in my life. And I think he feels the same way. And so we are there for each other when we need each other.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I knew there was a part of the conversation where I was just going to sit and be quiet because but even still listening to that part, I was like, I can't, having watched it three times, I can't imagine, you know, let alone, you know, I have no clue, but I just can't imagine getting up to go do what you were doing that quickly. But yeah, you know, it's, as much as we, you know, kind of, hey, Adam's awesome, you know, and everything, it's, that's standard. That's what we're supposed to do. I mean, we got in this together. We got to get through it together. And whether, you know, regardless of who has to get up and change a diaper, bottle, whatever, that's just standard.
But I love that. And I love hearing you say that. But like, I'll tell you, a lot of people would ask me like, well, who's babysitting Colt? I'd be like, well, he's with Dad. So Adam's babysitting?
No, that's like, his kid. Dad,
he's daddying. Yes.
He's daddying.
There's no babysitting here.
Right. He's just living. That's what parents do, right? Like they live with their children and they raise their children. So I'm not going to call it babysitting. No, I'm going to call it like daddying. He's being a dad right now, just like I'm a mom when I'm around Colt. So it was kind of funny to hear those comments and think, no, he's not babysitting. He's being a dad. Yeah,
I don't pay him by the hour. I'm not leaving him a tip. Yeah.
No way.
No, yeah. We totally, our culture needs to get away from that. Dads are dads, and that's what they're supposed to do. It's like, this child didn't come in the world by itself.
No.
I want to talk about your running now, currently, and you're working through the runner's dystonia, and like it all, you know, all of that came out, and we were all, I mean, just like for me, I was reading, just kind of feeling like, you know, how does this happen? How does it work? How is it affecting you? And I've loved you bringing us along on your journey. And tell us a little bit about what's going on now.
Yeah. So I guess my first diagnosis was in November of 21, but then I went to the Mayo Clinic because I just didn't believe that I had this neurological condition. In February of 22. So it's been over a year now. And I'm still just learning what works and what doesn't. There's no cures, but there's a lot of different treatment options. So I'm trying to take things slowly. I was on a medication that really helped me feel very, very stable and very, very safe, but it was a drug that shouldn't be used long term. And I had been on it for about a year and I was starting to have some other side effects. So I still take it, but only right before I exercise. I've been doing Botox every 3 months, essentially because when you have dystonia, it's a neurological condition, which just your brain wires get crossed and your brain just tells your muscles to fire and it won't stop. So like when I get my Botox, they'll put a needle in my muscle. They'll tell me to flex and you can actually hear the muscle moving. It makes like a noise. And then they'll say, relax. And if it's in a regular part of my leg, it'll just go silent. But if it's where I have dystonia, it still continues to go. You can still hear it because the brain just doesn't stop. So what Botox does is it stops that signal. But I mean, like your leg's just kind of dead. But so the brain sends the signal for it to stop firing, or the brain sends the signal to fire, but it can't because you have Botox. So I don't know that it's a long, long-term solution. It kind of feels more like a Band-Aid at this point, but it is giving me relief. It is giving me more security. And I've also started doing twice a week I work out with someone where we're just trying to make my whole body strong. His name is Chris Lee, and we just really focus on everything being strong, like doing calf raises and stuff because my calf has gotten really small, and just like really doing like some heavy lifting. And then I also started working with a neurological PT, which I didn't even know existed, but it's a lot of like just brain teaser stuff, balancing, but then honestly like brain teasing stuff, trying to get wires in my brain to fire up again. So it's been there's been some really, really great days and some really, really bad days. But right now I'm finding that around 40 miles a week is a pretty good spot for me where it's not too much. I am who I am, so I'm always trying to push it more. But that's where I'm at right now, and I'm grateful to be able to run that much.
And are you able to or willing to take a shot at a fun race, or are you just like, I can't go there because I know what I'm going to end up trying to do, so I just better not do it at all?
No, I think I could do that. One of my challenges is I feel very unsteady on pavement. So like my son wants to run the Boulder with me, but it's that would be 10K on pavement. And I think that I would be so tense that I don't think I could really make it past 5K. So that's one of my challenges that I'm challenging myself for is to be able to, although I won't be able to keep up with them next year, but to be comfortable to run 6 miles on pavement in 2024 is kind of my big goal. But just as you said, my brain's always going somewhere. Like I was at Boston, I was like, I don't know, maybe I could run the marathon again. Like maybe I could. It's like, Kara, you just said you were happy to be able to run 4 miles a day. Like, what are you doing? You know, but that's, my brain is always like that. Like, well, I don't know, maybe if I got a little bit more steady and my PT was working, like, I don't know, maybe I could come back and run Boston.
Oh yeah. That's like a,
probably not,
but that's a typical runner's thought. You're like, oh, yes. Now I'm running 40 miles a week. Maybe, you know, next year I can be.
Yeah.
We just think that way.
We totally do. Totally.
Could I run a respectable marathon on 65 miles a week? Maybe if I work just right, yeah. If I could inch up over the next.
Maybe if I work on those calf raises a little bit longer.
Yes. Yeah, see, you guys are in my brain right now. I'm like, my brain's going, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, yes, we could do that.
Well, then we will stop
that. We will stop that. We will not put those thoughts in your head. We do not want to be the people. It's like, she went on the Sweet Run podcast, and now they have her think, you know, saying she's going to run the Boston Marathon. No.
Nope.
Well, maybe. We'll see. We'll see. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Such an eye-opening and riveting account of what Kara went through as a distance runner. If you have not bought her book, The Longest Race, I highly recommend that you go and do that. We are so happy to have Kara on the show, and we wanted to take a quick moment to shout out our longtime sponsor, Inside Tracker. Go to our landing page, insidetracker.com/sweetrun, and at checkout, use the code SWEETRUN to save 25% off. And now let's get back to our conversation with Kara as she walks us through her original hometown of Duluth, Minnesota. Lake Superior, ice cream, trails, oh, all the things. So many good things.
So the last time you were on the show, you gave us the whole picture of Boulder, which we loved from your perspective. And so this time we get to talk about where you're from in Duluth, Minnesota. I'm so excited to talk about this.
Which, by the way, I loved the way you opened the book with that.
Oh,
I was like, oh, cool. I want to know, is you know, Ola Jean and Peppa? I want to know if the restaurant's still there. That's where I want to go. I want to get the one of those crazy burgers or something.
Sadly, no, the restaurant is not there. It I think it was dental offices for a while, and then it got torn down. They built a huge apartment complex there. Uh-huh. So somebody's house is no longer there. But yeah, I love Duluth. I moved there, obviously, when I was 4. I grew up there. That's where I consider home. My mom and my sister and her wife and kids are still there. A lot of my friends are there. And so we bought a cabin a couple of years ago. And so we actually spend June and July out there now.
Oh, nice. That's nice. That's like the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's good because it's when it's actually nice out there. And then when it's cold, we come back to Colorado.
Wait a minute. Just take that in for a second. You said when it's cold there, you go back to Colorado. And I'm like,
oh. This is an LA person talking, though.
I know. Ooh, well,
that's cold.
It's all relative. I'm sure. Okay.
It's all relative.
Yes.
Duluth can get so cold. I mean, like negative 40s cold. So I feel like Colorado is really warm compared to there.
For sure.
So if we come in June or July, let's start there. Where are you going to send us for a run?
Oh my gosh, there's so many great places. You definitely want to run around on the lake shore. So like you can go on the scenic highway and you can kind of run along there, or you can just go downtown. There's a boardwalk and a paved path, and you can run down through the canal. You can actually run over the aerial lift bridge, and then you can run down to Park Point if you want, which is the end of this this pier, but it's, you know, 5 miles down, and then you can, you know, you can go on the beach. It's not LA Beach, but you can go to the beach. But there's also so many great trails in Duluth because there's a lot of skiing that happens in the winter. So I grew up next to Hartley Field, which has multiple loops that are maintained all winter, but also in the summer. There's an outer loop and an inner loop. One is 5K, one is 3K. There's Bagley Nature Trails, which is beautiful trails in the forest that are chipped. So there's just so much great running in Duluth. And yeah, you got to run down by Lake Superior. There's lots of options there, like I said, at Park Point or on the boardwalk there, or even on London Road is a really beautiful place to run to. Mm.
I was going to say, when you were talking about the beach, I'm like, no. You know what? I'm becoming more of a lake person than the beaches. I mean, the beaches here are nice. Depending on where you go in LA, there can be some kind of dicey spots where we're like, oh, it's not what it's cracked up to be. Yeah. And like, we've taken some lake vacations and I'm like, okay, I'm down for this lake life. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I grew up obviously as a lake person. And it's kind of funny because my cousin and his kids were out two summers ago for my grandparents' funeral. And you know, you walk down, there are spiders and there are like fish and there are leeches and there's stuff in there, you know, but I don't even think about it. Like, I've only had a few leeches in my entire life. And once you jump in the water, the spiders aren't by you and the fish want nothing to do with you. But it was interesting seeing it from his kid's point of view, who grew up with a pool. Mm-hmm. They're like, this is terrifying. <laughs> <laughs> You know? And I'm like, no, nothing will hurt you. Once you get in the water, you're fine. But yeah, I definitely grew up as a lake kid. I still love swimming in the lake. And now that I'm older, Adam got me stand up paddle boards for my birthday a couple of years ago. So we'll take like a little date afternoon and we'll go paddle around the lake. And I love water. That's the one thing I do miss living in Colorado is, you know, I grew up in Duluth, which obviously is on Lake Superior, which is a huge lake. And then we also had a cabin on a small lake and all my friends had cabins on lakes. So I do miss being around water.
Yeah.
I love it.
So now we have to eat, of course. So tell us the good places to eat in Duluth.
Okay. Well, this wasn't there when I was growing up, but there's Canal Park Brewery, which obviously I wasn't old enough to drink then anyway, but it's down on the lake and you can sit outside and see all the waves coming in, see people going by. Like in Duluth, people are still rollerblading out there, you know? Love it. It's amazing. So I go to Canal Park Brewery at least once a week when I'm in town. I just love it down there. It's so pretty down there. If you like milkshakes, there's this place called the Portland Malt Shop that you have to go to. It's so good. The lines are long, but it's worth it. A place that's like really near and dear to my heart is Bridgman's, which is kind of by the mall. It's not necessarily in the most scenic area, but that's where my grandpa and I used to always go whenever I was in town. And they also have really good milkshakes, but it's like brunch. So they have like sandwiches and omelets and stuff like that. And if you're into it, it's one of the last places that still has an ice cream soda. My grandma Ola Jean loved ice cream sodas. So you can get one of those there too. So those are my favorites. I brunch at Bridgman's. We always get a milkshake. And there's this other place that we always go to a lot too. It's called Sir Benedict's. And it's also kind of down by Lake Superior. It's an old gas station that's been turned into this sandwich shop. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the sandwiches are huge. And it's just awesome. So we always go there a few times every year too.
Nice.
Okay, our kids will definitely want this. They are like in love with milkshakes.
Yeah, milkshakes and huge sandwiches.
It's like a new thing. It's like every weekend now, can we get a milkshake? I'm like, we just had milkshakes. And they're like, we want another one.
Well, that's the perfect scenario if they like sandwiches, because Sir Ben's is just a couple blocks from the Portland Malt Shop. So you can have your lunch. And if there's any room left, you can go get your milkshake.
Perfect. Yes. We're there.
That's it.
We'll do some stand-up paddle boarding afterwards. It's all good. All right, well, we have to have a place to stay, so where are we going to stay?
Okay, well, you could stay at my cabin or...
That sounds good.
I think that staying down by Lake Superior is the best. There's Fickers, which is this really cool old historic hotel, but it's awesome, and like the rooms look out over the lake, and it has some shops underneath it and restaurants and stuff and a bookstore. It's a really cool location. They're also a little bit further down, more towards the bridge. There's great there's a bunch of like hotels actually just on the lake as well. So I think those are the areas. It's called Canal Park. And so staying in a hotel in Canal Park is awesome because you can walk to the Canal Park Brewery. There's a bunch of shopping down there. There's Little Angie's Cantina. There's Grandma's Restaurant, which, you know, the marathon, Grandma's Marathon. So staying in Canal Park, you really can walk to all of these really fun adventures.
This is going to be so perfect. We're recording this in early May and, you know, we'll put it out for people traveling for Grandma's Marathon in half. So they'll be able to take advantage of these recommendations. Other than Grandma's, what would you say are some races that you love?
There's a race called the Park Point 5-Miler, which is awesome. And I ran it when I was younger than Colt, and it was so fun. And then I ran it a bunch of times after that. So that's in the summer. And then Grandma's Marathon does do some race series. Like they have a mile. The day before Grandma's Marathon, they have the William A. Irving, which is a giant ship that you can take a tour on. And it's just called that because you run around it. The William A. Irving 5K. But Duluth is a pretty active city. So Grandma's Marathon puts on shorter races throughout the year. Obviously, the big culmination is Grandma's. And it's a huge like celebration for the whole community. Like I grew up volunteering on London Road, handing out water, going down to see coaches racing, going down to see my aunt and uncle racing. So it's just a huge event for the whole community that everyone gets into.
Are you going to be there this year for the races?
I am. So usually Grandma's Marathon and USATF Outdoor Champs are the same day. But this year, USATF Champs is in July. So I'm actually going to be at Grandma's Marathon this year. And I'm going to help do some commentating for it, which is super fun, and be a part of the expo and events leading up to it. And my son's going to run the 5K. So yes, I will be there
this year. Oh, that sounds like so much fun.
Ton of fun. Now, do we have a local running store that you prefer, recommend in town?
There's two great running stores. One is Austin Jaro, which is the one that I grew up with. And Jaro Wallen, he's one of the co-owners. He was like so good to me as a kid, helped me get fitted for shoes. They used to be huge. They had actually three locations. Now they just have one. But they know what they're talking about at Austin Jaro. But there's also the Duluth Running Company, which does an amazing job as well. And so you can't go wrong going to either place.
Perfect.
Nice.
Would you say there's any sort of little hidden gems or something special in Duluth that you're like, you have to do this when you're there?
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think of the things that I always have to do. I always have to go to the North Shore. So it's basically up from Canal Park. It's just you follow it up north. It follows Lake Superior all the way up. If you feel so inclined and you drive up, keep going north. You could go to Split Rock or do a little hiking on the Lake Superior Trail. And there's waterfalls and all sorts of stuff. It's not that far of a drive from Duluth. But in Duluth, you got to just go down to Canal Park and skip rocks. You'll see hundreds of people doing this. It's Colt's favorite thing to do. There's just rocks all over the beach and it's really accessible. We all just walk down in our bare feet. And there's this golf course called Inger Golf Course, and I'm not a golfer, but there's a tower at Inger, and every year we go and we walk up to the top, and I think it's just nostalgia, but like every summer I have to go to the tower and climb to the top with my family, and we look out, and it gives you great views. But there's just, I don't know, I just love Duluth so much. If you're willing to drive up the North Shore a little bit, there's a place called Betty's Pies. And they make raspberry pie, which not a lot of places make raspberry pie. So there's just a lot of like fun things like that. Obviously, we're Minnesotans, so we love our food. But it's just so beautiful. And if you do have time to like check out the North Shore, there's, like I said, there's so many trails, there's waterfalls. The sights are just breathtaking. Like you can't imagine how big Lake Superior is. Yeah. You know, it looks like you're looking out into the ocean. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot of beautiful places along to check out.
Love it.
This is more of like a little bit of a logistical question, but do most people fly into Minneapolis and drive or fly directly into Duluth?
Most people go to Minneapolis and drive because the puddle jumper flight is expensive and it's only like 20 minutes. I've been told for years by United that they're going to have a Denver to Duluth direct. It hasn't happened yet. Right now, you can only fly into Duluth from Chicago or Minneapolis. So it just kind of depends on your itinerary. It is about a 2.5-hour drive from Minneapolis. So if you can get on that puddle jumper, it does save time and then you're there. But oftentimes the flights are a lot cheaper if you just go to Minneapolis, get your rental car and drive up. And if you do do that, if you decide to fly into Minneapolis and drive up, halfway between Minneapolis and Duluth is a little town called Hinckley, and they have a place called Toby's, which makes, and I promise you, the best cinnamon rolls and caramel rolls in the world. So it's a great, like when I was growing up, that was our, we would always stop there on the way there and the way back. So if you do, make sure you stop at Toby's in Hinckley to get your caramel rolls and your cinnamon rolls.
Great minds think alike. That was the first thing I was thinking. Okay, we take the drive. Where should I stop? There's got to be some hidden gem along the way.
That's it.
So that's the one.
That's the one. Yeah.
That is it's amazing. Gold.
Yes.
I love that.
We love our cinnamon rolls here too.
Yeah.
So. Oh, well, I'm telling you, you got to try these.
Okay.
They're so good. Like, I'm embarrassed to tell you how many I've had over my lifetime, but it's worth it.
And that's a good way to break up a 2.5 hour drive too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally. You can use the bathroom, get your treats, you know, everyone's happier when they get back in the car.
100%.
Oh man, this is so good.
Yeah.
Are we missing anything about Duluth that we need to ask Kara about?
No. I think we can find you on Twitter or Instagram or somewhere if there's somebody has a Duluth question.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I am crazy about Duluth. I love it. I'm so proud to be from there. So hit me up at Kara Goucher on Instagram or Twitter. I will tell you whatever you want to know. It's just such a great community. And if you're going to Run Grandma's, you're going to feel super embraced. We aren't Boston. We don't have all those people. But everyone that lives in Duluth will be there supporting you. And we just love it. And we love all the runners that come through. So
that's a good, I love that because it's, I've always heard that it's so well run and you can run really fast and you don't have the masses. I mean, a world major is always going to have its appeal, but there's something about a smaller race where you get a lot of crowd support, but you don't have all the masses of people and just trying to navigate through everything. So.
And it's just a beautiful race. Like you literally run along the lake, the North Shore towards Duluth, and then you can see it. You can see like the aerial lift bridge, which is this famous bridge that still goes up and down. That's another thing that's kind of fun for people to see. The bridge goes up multiple times a day as boats come through. And so I still take my son and we lie down underneath it when it goes up. And then when it comes down, you think it's going to crush you, even though it's humanly impossible. But we still do that even now. Like we'll do it now, even though he's 12. But you can see the bridge and you're like following the landscape towards, or by the lake, but following the landscape towards the bridge. So it's like this. I remember I ran the half maybe 4 years ago. And I was just running in this pack and this guy goes, "Well, your city's really beautiful." And I was like, "Well, thank you. I don't even live here anymore, but I'll take it." Absolutely. It's a beautiful course.
And you get a chance to live there for 2 months out of the year. So you get the best of it.
Yeah, heck yeah. Yes.
Well, last time we asked you, because we ask every guest this question, so I'm going to ask it again because maybe it's changed in 2 years. But if you could run anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
I don't even remember what I said last time. Now that I am in Duluth more often, I won't say something in Duluth because I actually get to do my runs there now. San Moritz. I used to train in San Moritz in Switzerland. Maybe that's what I said last time. I don't remember. But
I know we're bad. We didn't remember either. I'm like, oh, I should have looked.
I either said like probably Bagley Nature Trails in Duluth or San Moritz. So I'm going with San Moritz all the way. The trails are so beautiful. The air is so clean and crisp. And I wish that, like you miss things about being a competitive athlete. And I do miss training camp up there and being up there. So that's where I'd go back.
Nice. That's a good one. I love that. Kara, this has been so much fun. Thank you I know you're busy. You've got a lot going on. So we really appreciate you coming on the show again.
No, thank you so much for having me. It was good to catch up with you both.
Yes.
Yeah. And well, I missed you in Boston. I can't believe, I was like, packing for Boston and whatever. And I was like going through everything and I'm like, I know I'll get to see Kara because I wanted to come to you and Dez's, the podcast recording. And it was literally, and I'm a Brooks ambassador. And it was sold out. And I was like, okay.
It was funny because I kept seeing pictures of you and I was like, I just saw them, but I never saw her.
So there was something else that I was going to come to. It was a panel discussion on Sunday morning. And I just wasn't able, I was just like
You needed to rest.
I needed to rest at that point.
You did. I feel like Boston, it's so easy to get carried away because there's so many fun things going on. And then I feel like you made the right choice because at some point you have to be like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I did come
around. I am here to run a marathon.
I know. Yeah.
I probably should put my feet up and rest a little bit.
I think I did a good job because like I had this list of things that I wanted to do. And as the weekend went on, I started crossing them off. I'm like, nope, I can't do that because – you know, we've already been moving around so much. I'm like, I came here to like run the marathon. I want to come back when I'm not running the marathon and do all the things. But
yeah.
Yeah.
You made the right choice. Yeah. Good job.
Cool. Thank you.
Well, we know where to find you. And we're, I'm telling you, if you haven't, go get, read, listen to Kara tell her story.
The longest race.
The longest
race. Go buy it.
I don't even have the words. I'm sorry. It's awesome. It's awesome. I hate to, I use that word, but it is a story. It's gripping. It's compelling. It's high drama. It's so many things. And it's a story that needs to be told. And I'm so glad you decided to, you know, share it with us. And I hope there's some good learning and growth in the industry and in the world because of it.
And I want to say really quick too, I feel like when in the beginning of our conversation, when I talked about the book, like, it's just my nature to smile. And I realize I want to say this, like there were some parts of the book that like there's no need to smile. And so I want to say that like when I was reading it, I was definitely not smiling. And there was a lot of, that I was just taking in going, is this real? Like, I can't believe this happened. And so I want to say that like it takes you through so many emotions in the very, well, some of it in the very best way. And I don't know what I want to say, but thank you for telling that story for all of us to hear and to put it into our hearts. So
I appreciate it from both of you. And I, you know what? There are hard parts. I've had some hard times in my life, but I'm happy. Yeah. I'm fulfilled. The things that happen to me don't define me. And I need people to hear that, you know, like I appreciate you both so much for taking the time to read it and support it. And now we can make things better together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kara. I'll see you soon. I'm giving you big hugs
guys.
From afar.
All right. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Kara Goucher, thanks so much for coming back to the Sweet Run podcast. It was such a joy to hear you break down each phase of the highs and lows of your journey as a professional runner in the Nike Oregon Project. Your opening description of Duluth was a great foundation for discussing all things running and food in your home state of Minnesota. Everyone, The Longest Race is such a good listen or read. So pick up a copy and follow Kara on Twitter or Instagram at Kara Goucher.
We absolutely love producing new conversations every single week with passionate runners living in awesome destinations. It is literally a travel guide for runners. Thank you so much for being here. If you could do us a favor and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we would so appreciate that and would help new listeners to find our show. Also, follow us on social media. For Sweet Run, follow us on Instagram or Facebook and follow Nat Runs Far on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the places. Thank you to Inside Tracker for sponsoring our show. Happy running and training, and we will see you next week.